Comes from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 2, verses 41 through 52. It's found on page 725 of the Pew Bibles. I love this story. I think it is particularly special because we really can see just the humanity of the Holy Family. Now, every year, his parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover. And when Jesus was 12, they went up as usual for the festival. When the festival was ended and they started to return, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but his parents did not know it. Assuming that he was in a group of travelers, they went a day's journey. Then they started to look for him among their relatives and friends. When they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem to search for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Child, why have you treated us like this? Look, your father and I have been searching for you in great anxiety." Jesus said to them, "Why were you searching for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he said to them. Then he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was obedient to them. His mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in years, and in divine and human favor. May God's blessings be upon this reading this morning. Well, it's good to be back here among you. I took some time off between Christmas and the new year. I worshiped in the church that I grew up in. Got to see lots of folks that were surprised to see me there and that I haven't seen in quite some time. And then in my days off, I got caught up on some of that stuff, you know, that always goes to the bottom of your to-do list because you just don't have time to do it, the organizing and things that just pile up but aren't pressing. And so it was great to do that. But I also reconnected with some friends that I don't get to see very often, including two friends who are teachers, special ed teachers. One is in the middle school, one's in the high school in Lexington. They both talk about always, they love what they do, they love the kids and all of that. But as we talked about work and such, both of them separately talked about some of the struggles of schools in these days, how violence, fights and such are just a regular occurrence, and how both of them no longer even seem to hear curse words even when they're directed at them because it's such a common experience. What has happened? I said to both of them. They mentioned poverty and absentee parents. They talked about higher rates of mental illness and drug use, about the internet and social media, and the decreased time spent outside and less time with good role models in their lives. My conversations with them really resounded in my mind as I read the text and thought about it this week, imagining the world that Jesus was in at age 12 versus the world that we have today. Teens today have a very different lifestyle, a very different world than in Jesus's time. They say that 90% of teens say that they have some type of emotional scar now. 20% have been diagnosed with a mental illness, and once diagnosed with that, about half of those drop out of school. Suicide is the second leading cause of death for this age group. Every four minutes, a teenager's arrested for drugs or alcohol in the U.S. 18% of them live in poverty. 93% use the internet regularly, and that may be closer to 100% now. 55% of them say they have given out information over the internet to people they don't know. And 67% say they know how to keep their parents from finding out what they do on the internet. Very scary. 90% of our youth have viewed pornography by the age of 18, and often the very first time happens around the age of 12, the same age that Jesus was when his parents found him in the temple listening and asking questions. A very different world today. As I walked through the church that I grew up in last Sunday to go to worship, I thought about how many hours I had spent in those spaces. I know about every nook and cranny of that place because of, over the years, the amount of time I spent there. And no matter how long it's been since I've been there, it always feels like coming home because it's such a second home to me growing up. Here at Providence a few years ago, some of you may know this story, after everyone had left the building, I think we had something going on that day. Everybody had left the building and I went to lock the doors in the back and turn off all the lights and check the doors and all of those kinds of things. And then was heading back to my office to get my stuff to go home, and I found Eddie Payne sitting by himself in the narthex. And I said, "Eddie, how are you getting home?" He said, "I don't know." He wasn't worried. He wasn't anxious. So I contacted Jennifer. She thought Eddie was with Glenn. Glenn evidently thought he was with Jennifer. So I took him home. And I reflected on how relaxed he was, you know, just so not stressed. Because Providence is where he grew up. This is his second home. He wasn't worried. He has been here for lock-ins and spent the night. Most adults haven't done that. He has had meals, and he's been here before the sun's come up for the sunrise service at Easter time. And he has helped pack bags and done Cub Scouts here in our gym. This is like second home to Eddie, so he wasn't worried because this is a safe place. This is a place that he knows that he is okay. The temple was the second home for Jesus. "Did you not know that I must be in my Father's house?" Jesus asked his parents. Mary and Joseph went up every year to the temple for this festival, Scripture says. So when he was 12, they went up as usual, Scripture says. And they went once a week at least to the synagogue in their area, their neighborhood, for the Sabbath. Jesus was very comfortable in God's houses, like Eddie when he got left behind with his parents, thought he must be with relatives and friends. He wasn't stressed. He wasn't worried. "It's okay. I'll be safe." And that got me to thinking about when youth might get separated now from their parents. Does the church ever even make the list of places to look? Since only 20% of Americans now attend church regularly, by the time our youth are in 10th grade, they are only still in church if their parents make them. Once they leave home for college or to work or whatever, they also leave church. Once they leave, they are the least likely of all age groups to attend any kind of religious service or activities, the least likely to pray, the least likely to say they're influenced by their religion, and twice as likely to identify as atheists. We don't know a whole lot about Jesus' childhood or youth or young adulthood, for that matter, but we can be certain that he was regularly at worship. In the Bible, we are told about the birth narrative that we have spent so much time in, with the angels and the manger and the strips of cloth and the shepherds. And then the Magi, which we remember today on Epiphany, came to visit him. But by that time, as I told the girls, he was in a house. Jesus was probably toddling around by that time. But the foreshadowing of the search for Jesus by the Magi is also the way that we imagine the foreshadowing of searching for Jesus throughout time, including now. The Magi were Gentiles, not Jews. They studied the stars, and somehow they aligned in such a way that they knew something spectacular had happened. And so they went to Jerusalem to ask, "Where is the one who's been born the King of the Jews?" The Jewish people answered, "Well, the prophet Micah says that our shepherd will be born in Bethlehem." And so they traveled there to Bethlehem following a star. After the Magi left, Joseph was told in a dream to flee to Egypt, where they were refugees, until the death of Herod. The next thing we know, Jesus is 12. He's at the temple in Jerusalem at Passover, listening to the scholars, asking questions. From age 12, the Bible skips about 20 years to Jesus' baptism as an adult. We don't know a lot about his youth or childhood or young adult years, but there are writings outside the Bible that fill in some gaps. There's an ancient writing composed in the late 1st century or the early 2nd century that is titled Infancy, Gospel of Thomas. Now, that's different than the Gospel of Thomas. Infancy, Gospel of Thomas is about Jesus as a child. It says that at age 5, Jesus made birds out of mud and then clapped his hands to make them fly. It says that Jesus raised a boy from the dead so that the boy could say that Jesus was not the one who pushed him off the roof. Set the record straight. It says that when Jesus helped his father in the carpentry shop, if the wood did not fit, that he would stretch the wood to match the amount that he needed. There are also stories in other ancient writings that take Jesus to England, and there are others that say he spent years in India. If you go to India, you hear lots of stories about that. I do hope Jesus made birds out of clay or spent time in India. I hope that he had a rich and full life with lots of different experiences, traveling to many different places, because the 3 years that we know about, the last three of his life, were all spent in a pretty small area geographically, and they were full of challenges and trials. So it's really nice to imagine that Jesus might have had a nice and rich and fun childhood and youth and adolescence and young adulthood, but whatever we imagine for Jesus, whether in England or Nazareth or India, we know that he was steeped in religious rituals in his home and in his place of worship, that his faith was really important to him and definitely influenced who he was and how he lived. And it was because of his comfort in God's house that he was able to be surprised that his parents didn't think to look for him there first. You know, it's not unusual to tell stories about great people in their childhood when they exhibited some kind of characteristic that pointed to the way that their life would go, like these stories about Jesus. We know there are stories like that about the Buddha and Augustus. We all probably have heard stories about Mozart and how he began to play the piano at the age of 4, or the golfing abilities of Tiger Woods when he was very young, or Tara Lipinski in her early youth was already a great skater. We even tell stories about our own kids as they grow up too, don't we? My daughter has been putting on shows and directing her friends since she was able to talk, so it's no wonder she's in musical theater now. And it's important, I think, for us, thinking about this passage in the Bible, thinking about our own experiences with children in our lives, that children are encouraged and given opportunities to explore and carry out their passions and to learn and develop physically and mentally and also spiritually. You know, I read a long study this week it's a national study of youth and religion that came out of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. It's a longitudinal, long-term study that's been conducted on adolescents, and they found that religious youth in the United States have significantly higher self-esteems and hold more positive attitudes about life than their less religious peers. They determined religiosity based on worship attendance, holding a high importance of faith, and their years spent active in a church and in youth groups. These findings were still significant even when they controlled for other factors like poverty and race, family, makeup. But not only are kids happier and more positive, these findings found, but they were less likely, are less likely, to participate in delinquent and risky behaviors. They're less likely to get drunk, to smoke, and to do drugs. They have fewer problems in schools. They're less likely to commit a crime. They're more likely to participate in constructive and socially positive activities. In another study, adults are also found who are active in church to be more positive about their lives and be more satisfied and fulfilled than adults who are not in church. Now, I know that I'm a pastor and these are the things I'm supposed to say and that you expect me to say, but the thing is, when you get into the research, it supports it. We all think people should engage in things that are good for them, right? We all agree that people should eat healthy foods and drink plenty of water, that people should get exercise and at least 8 hours of sleep a night, that we need to be careful and manage our stress. We tell parents to hold their babies and sing to them, to read to their children every night, to feed them healthy foods and not junk. But how often do we tell others in our lives or that we meet that they should go to church because it's good for them? Your children should be in church because it's good for them and because research supports it, and we don't just say it because we want you to come and be bored by a sermon on Sunday morning. Being active in church is not going to right every single wrong of our community, and it's definitely not a quick fix for any problems. But there's some really important things that we get in church that we really get nowhere else in life, like learning that there is something bigger than us, and that something connects us to all people and all places, to all creation. That we are not in control, nor are we the center of the universe, but at the same time, created on purpose in God's image, beautiful and holy and loved. That we're forgiven, and that our mistakes do not define who we are. That God's love is so great that God came to live and walk among us to show us the way back to God's own heart. A church gives us a community of people who will celebrate us in the good times, but that will also walk with us when things get really hard. It's where we learn about God's ways through scripture and hymns, through the Lord's Supper and Sunday school. It's a church that everyone is accepted, but also challenged to be the best that we can be. A new year has begun. We have a clean slate, so to speak, a fresh start, so to speak. I hope all of us set some kinds of little goals for ourselves with our physical and mental health. I hope that all of us can commit to being active in church. And it is my prayer that our churches, not just Providence, but just churches, would be overflowing with people of all ages who, when asked, "Where have you been?" can answer, "Didn't you know that I must be in my Father's house?"